Welcome to the Real Talk of Dental, where we pull back the bib and talk about what's really going on beneath the surface. Not just the charts, not just the systems. We're talking about the culture, the chaos, and the confessions. I'm Brandy Marzolino, and with 20 years deep in this industry, I am fresh out of patience for performative leadership. This is your space to laugh, cry, question everything, and maybe shout into a pillow between patients. We've got anonymous confessions, we've got call-ins, we've got ops room drama, and we've got the truth, served hot and a little too real. Think of this as your backstage pass to the break room no one dares to mic. Until now. As part of the Real Talk of Dental podcast, I have an anonymous call-in line. And not that long ago, I had a caller leave me this message. A truth bomb in dental is there is not a hygiene shortage. It is a pseudo shortage or a perceived shortage. What it is if you go run the numbers in the States, you will find that. The number of hygienists are the same. We have retained our license. What's happening is we are choosing not to work in toxic environments. We're choosing not to work for doctors that just want us to provide patient care at a lower standard because they only want to give us a certain amount of time. We're choosing not to work with instruments that are not acceptable. We're choosing not to work in micromanaged environments. We're choosing not to work in an environment that doesn't allow us to rise to what our education is and what we're allowed to do. We're oral healthcare providers and preventionists. We can talk about nutrition and we can talk about prevention and blood pressure and all of that stuff. And doctors aren't allowing us to do that. They just see us as pretty little girls that pick and shine teeth, and we're just choosing not to do that anymore. So it's a perceived pseudo shortage. It's that we are not going to tolerate the low wages, lack of benefits, and toxic environments. Whew! Well, to be honest, this is not the first time I have heard this from hygienists or around the industry. I asked if somebody wanted to come and chat with me about this, and a colleague of mine, none other than suggested Jennifer, who I have on today's podcast. Jennifer has been in the dental industry since 7 years old, and she is a very passionate hygienist and now an advisor to offices on a variety of different things. She gets both sides as both owner and operator, and also being a chairside hygienist, really understanding the oath of advocating for patient care. So is there really a hygiene shortage? Are the environments in dental offices that bad where hygienists are no longer tolerating it? Or are dentists and owners being held hostage by hygienists, knowing that there's a bit of a war going on below the surface and hygienists are coming in demanding astronomical wages that the offices cannot meet? What's really going on inside of hygiene? And we explore that today with none other than Jennifer Stedman, who is just extraordinary and brings a whole lifetime, literally, of wisdom and knowledge. And we dive in to these very controversial subjects. Please enjoy. Jennifer, welcome to the Real Talk of Dental. I've been so excited to have you on because hygiene in the dental space is such a hot topic, and it was pointed out to me that you are someone that will get a little spicy and a little real with me when it comes to the world of hygiene inside of dentistry. So we are just going to dive right into it because I know you have a very diverse lens when it comes to picking this apart, and I just want to hear from your perspective. What the heck is going on with hygiene and why?
Yeah, so I think the truth bomb that came out, right? First of all, thank you so much for having me on. I'm so excited to be here with you. But the truth bomb came out was about hygiene shortage, like a perceived shortage in hygiene, because a lot of people are looking for hygienists and can't find them for whatever reason. And the caller that, you know, posed the question said it's a perceived shortage and it's because people have their licenses and either have stepped away or they just don't want to deal with some of the challenges that are happening in certain practices. So a few different things there. So I'll say my background, I was an assistant hygienist, and I personally do not have a hygiene license anymore, so we'll talk about that a little bit too. But I was in a car accident and can't feel these three fingers sometimes, so not safe for myself or for patients. And I chose to let my license lapse. And a lot of people ask me, well, why did you do that? Why did I just keep your license? Well, I can't practice anymore. I still have my degree in dental hygiene, and I can still support teams and support hygienists. But for me, I was like, it's okay. But I transitioned into the operations side of dentistry. So I managed practices. My former role, I was VP of Ops of a DSO and oversaw HR and was really able to support teams in a different way. So I can see things from different angles and understand that too. And also have a hygiene heart. You know, I love to take like calculus off the distal at number one and like use that calculus on a 2x2 like it's a trophy and show you exactly. Yeah. The hygienist will know exactly what I'm talking about. But it's something that we need to talk about. So the challenge here is more of a retention culture and standards issues and practices, because I think since COVID, I hate to use that C word, but since then, things have gotten a little or a lot different for hygienists. And they're being asked to do a lot in the time that they have, but also maybe not understanding everything that they can do to help to support their patients in the best way, or they do know and they're not able to provide that to their patients based on all different things that are going on in the practice. So I've heard a lot of things and seen a lot of things with toxicity, micromanaging. They don't have the supportive environment that they need. Don't have the proper instruments, so they can't really do instrumentation. Like all of their ultrasonic tips are worn down and they're harming themselves and their bodies and their patients in the process. So that's just a little bit of the things that are going on there too.
Yeah. And so the truth bomb that was also shared was this idea that, oh, we're just supposed to be these pretty little hygienists cleaning and polishing teeth and not having an opinion and just being bossed around. Now, I've seen I've been in the coaching space for 20 years. I've seen all kinds of leaders and doctors and relationships. And yes, that is certainly a mentality. And I since it was an anonymous call-in, I have no idea the kind of practice or the owner or the doctor she was working with. But that tends to be a little bit more of an older model, I would say. I think most owners and doctors now are really like your lens, where it's like demanding more from the hygienist. You know, you really need to produce and you need to do it in a certain amount of time. But then there's a mix of that of like, okay, well, I need to do all these things, but you don't have any say or you don't have any autonomy in the kind of care. You need to do it this way. And I think hygienists are looking more, and you correct me if I'm wrong, obviously, are looking to have more of a say and break away entirely, where they have complete autonomy on the level of care they're giving. But I think that also is different based on the kind of hygienist, right? I think some are comfortable with that idea and some do want more direction and don't want to have complete autonomy. So do you know where a lot of this is coming from, and what's your opinion on like what's the best model?
Yeah, I'll say as a hygienist, we all took an oath. Mm-hmm. And we took an oath to do what's in the best interest of our patients. And hygienists are prevention perio specialists. Like, that's what we do. So, you know, for doctors and teams out there, like, let them do that. Let them talk about periodontal health. Let them talk about nutrition and blood pressure and patient education. And really, that's honestly going to help the long-term health outcomes of the patient, but also the long-term outcomes of that patient retaining, staying in your practice, and also referring their family and friends, because you've delivered that highest standard of care. And kind of going back to what you said there too, hygienists want to say, because they're the ones that are responsible for that care. So make them part of it. And I think that's where we need to kind of sit down and have this conversation. So any leaders out there, a hygienist out there, like, this needs to be collaborative. You are a provider in your practice. If you're a hygienist, doctors are providers in the practice. Sit down and collaborate. Do you have a written standard of care? If you don't, then you need one. And you need to go over, and ultimately at the end of the day, it's the doctors say, right? However, you need to sit down and go over everything and go over the resources and say, hey, doc, look, this is why I think that we should have our standard of care like this. Come with the facts. Don't just say it that a lot of people do this or a lot of offices do it. I'm not a fan of that. Like, I want the facts and nothing but the facts, you know? But you need to have evidence to back it up. But that's very collaborative. And do it together. Buy into that. That's going to also just create and enhance your culture even more. Have them sit at the table with you and do it. It shouldn't be, you know, telling someone what to do. It's, we're going to do this together. Because at the end of the day, what's most important is the care that we provide to our patients. Again, like, that's an oath that we took. So it's just so important that we be mindful of that. And yes, you know, some practices are like, oh, you know, we're cutting down our hygiene appointments to 45 minutes or less. Please don't. Keep it at an hour. There's so many things that need to be done. But give your hygienists, like when you talk about the autonomy, like give them the autonomy when a patient comes into the practice and based on your standard of care, if they see something different and they say, oh, this patient is not a prophy anymore, we need to have a, you know, perio conversation, whatever that might be, we need to have a perio conversation, give them the autonomy to stop and not proceed with that prophy because they know that that's not what's going to deliver the best care. And I think that's where you can have the best of both worlds if you have that strong leadership and you have that strong provider relationship. And if you don't have that, you need to work on it or you need to find it, right? That old school, I'll say, mentality of, you know, the girls that will just clean and polish the teeth. That's not, I'm going to say, hopefully where we are, because man, there's been a lot of changes since then.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of technology for sure, too. You know, like we've gotten a lot more efficient and there's so many more tools. What are your thoughts on, I like how you brought up the amount of time that hygienists are given with patient. Mm-hmm. I was recently speaking with somebody and she's an office manager for a 16-op practice. Yep. And she said, well, the hygienists are complaining. They want to make more money. And the doctor said, okay, well, we'll shorten your appointments to 50 minutes so we can fit more appointments during the week. And I was like, what? That was their solution. And they were pretty firm about it. I mean, they were like, this is the answer to the problem. And I said, this is the most asinine thing I've heard, but they weren't budging on it. And they didn't hire me for my opinion. It was just, we were just kind of chatting offline about it. But I mean, maybe I'm wrong about this, but what are your thoughts on shortening the appointment time to jam in more appointments so that the hygienist can be paid more?
You're not wrong. So one of the things that we helped to coach on at Inspired Hygiene 2 is the 20-20-20 principle. So if you think about a 60-minute hygiene appointment, the first 20 minutes, so the first third of the appointment, you're doing all the diagnosis. So you're taking x-rays, you're doing perio charting, you might be, you know, intraoral photos, you might be doing a scan, so many different things, all the diagnostic, review medical history, everything, the first 20 minutes. The second 20 minutes is scaling, right? Just scaling. If you're scaling for more than 20 minutes, that's not just a prophy. I'll say that. So it's a good like thing to get in your mind. And then the last 20 minutes is reserved for, you know, polishing, patient care, the doctor's exam, your notes, cleaning the room. So if you think about it that way and just break up the appointment like that, it makes it more manageable. Now, in that time, obviously there's crossover. It's not like, oh, doc, you can't come in until the last 20 minutes, right? But just, it's a general idea to kind of get your head around that. There's so many other things that can be done during that time that need to be done because there's so many adjuncts, right? We talk about the evolution of dentistry. There's so many adjuncts that we need to know about and be able to provide for our patients that would increase production, but it's because you're improving your patient care. That's why production happens, right? So it's not money first, care after. It's because we're now delivering this higher standard of care. Now the compensation increases. It's not just, you know, cramming more patients in the schedule. So they could do, you know, there's perio protect trays, there's Curadont by Vivartis. It's even, you know, scanning, maybe they need Invisalign. Well, you scan in the hygiene chair and then it's, so everything kind of plays out there. But making sure that your hygiene team and your doctors are aware of all of these adjuncts and how to implement them. Don't do it all at once, like pick one, right, and kind of go with that. But that can help to increase production to be able to pay your hygienist more. And I, you know, one of the things that I think is challenging too is I will say, like, while I stand for hygienists and it's like, no, you need to be paid what you deserve, you can't go in there and just say that you deserve it. You need to be an advocate for yourself and an advocate for your patients. Mm-hmm. So I am a huge proponent in a base like salary or base hourly wage plus commission. Mm. Because it's like, okay, you're always going to get this, but because you're delivering this care, you're going to get something else. Because look, you can't, I'm telling you, I had hygienists in the past that would just come in and just say, well, I want a $5 an hour raise because they just got it down the street. That's not how it works. Mm-hmm. You know, as a business, you can't do things like that. So be part of the solution instead of being potentially part of the problem. And come and see what you can do and, you know, go take classes and say, hey, look, I just learned about this new product. Can we see if this is something that we want to implement in the practice? So that way you're helping to bring that in there too and bring some of that business side with you is going to be very, very helpful. It makes you more valuable as a person and as a hygienist and as a provider in the practice.
Yeah, I like that. Because I've heard more and more people wanting to move more towards the commission model. And those that are really, you know, focused on doing all they can for their patients tend to earn more on the commission model than if they were paid hourly. Then you hear a lot from doctors and owners that they feel sort of held hostage by hygienists right now because they know that it's hard to hire a hygienist. And so a hygienist can come in and demand a certain level of pay and they say, okay, because they're in sometimes desperate for a hygienist. And then you'll see a lot on the, you know, Facebook groups and things like that, or even on LinkedIn, doctors are saying, what do I do? I'm paying a hygienist more per hour than I'm earning based on after the insurance write-offs, you know, do I just look at it as a loss or an investment to feed doctor schedule or something like that? So there's like this delicate balance based on you have the go-getter hygienists that, you know, have your mentality of really wanting to serve patients and can I add more to the business and just have that bigger mindset. And then, you know, there's always the percentage. I don't know what the percentage is these days, but there's always people that are like, well, I'm going to take advantage of this situation because I know the industry is desperate for hygienists. And not all hygienists are made equal either. Some I've had some myself that weren't great, you know, even as a patient. And then I've had some that are amazing, right? So like, what do you say to the doctor that is really struggling on how do I do this? And then also, how do I keep it fair? Because if you did move to commission-based, you do have those that are going to be earning more than those that are not. They'll probably be earning less, and then you might lose them. But they say they don't want to be driven by money, and it's more of a belief, you know, mentality, even if they have that standard of care that you're talking about. It's we're kind of in this interesting time where it's a little wild west out there. But what's your take on all of that?
Yeah. So it's definitely something that you need to work towards. You can't just one day walk in and say, guess what? We're going to commission. Like that. Don't do that. But you need to start like planting seeds and having conversations. And I think one of the biggest challenges, I'll say that I even, you know, had to understand and maneuver was there's a lot of dentists out there that do not go over any finances of the businesses with their team at all. And then when they want to, it's because they're going to a commission structure. So then it's like, well, wait, why are we tracking things and why are we going over things? You should be talking about the health of your business with the people that are creating that health or unhealthiness. Right. Like you need to go over the numbers with them and you need to show them and explain to them, OK, when this happens, this happens. And they also need to understand, if you think about it, like if you have like a pitcher of water and you have all of these cups and here's your rent and here's your equipment and here's your service fees and your supplies and up and here's your compensation. And it's a giant glass at the end. If you're dumping water into what is left at the end of it? Mm-hmm. But if we're working together, and we're making sure that, you know, we're proactive with our equipment, that we're doing maintenance on it. So maybe we keep down some of the, you know, some of the expense there with maintenance. If we are being proactive with, you know, instruments that we need, and we're not buying all of them at once, and we're kind of phasing things out. If we are doing education so that way we can deliver a higher standard of care, then we're going to have the production. But are we healthy on the admin side and the clinical side to make sure that we have all the documentation and everything is billed correctly so we get paid the first time? Because you can produce all that you want, but it doesn't mean that you can collect it. So you need to make sure that all of the systems are integrated together. And really, that's what you're going over with your team. So if you start planting the seed and having the conversation, that's going to be important. But also show them what it would look like. So when we had switched, or when I had switched some of our practices from a just regular hourly compensation to a base plus commission, we went back and showed them, like, the last 90 days, this is what you took home. And this is what you would have taken home if you were on this structure. You can't just say it because it doesn't mean anything until they see it in front of them. So really map it out and show them exactly what that would look like. So that way they're aware of it, because it's kind of the fear of the unknown at the same time. Look, I think we need to make sure that our entire team has the educational level to support the care that we want, and that doctors are willing to let the hygienists do what they can, right? Do what they're supposed to do. And then hygienists, like, you have to help out too. I'll say, for the hygienists out there that just want to scale and polish, if you have someone on your team that you just want to scale and polish, be a little controversial, they probably shouldn't be on your team. If you have a standard of care that says that you do perio treatment and that bleeding gums, or, you know, it's, that's not healthy. Like, healthy gums should not bleed. And you say that, okay, we're going to follow this and we're going to do perio, and you have a hygienist that's refusing to, that's not the culture that you want. I wouldn't want to be around that, you know? So it's important that you are weighing all the options, because the right hygienist is out there. If you have the right support, the right culture in that education, it just creates so much value. That person is out there if you choose to find it.
And I think they get more inspired too, like when they see that their livelihood is in their own hands and they can get more creative and, like you said, get more training, take more courses, learn, you know, new technology, more services they can offer their patients, and really continue to level up on how they want to serve their patients. And it could be really profitable. I mean, there's hygienists out there that are making well over, you know, six figures on a commission model. And again, I know it's not driven by money, but it's also like, you know, they're providing exceptional care for their patients and they're really excited about it as well, which I think is pretty awesome. Hey, I just want to pop in on today's episode and talk to you about this new GPT I wrote called Boundary Boss GPT. And it's for those moments where you've said yes to something and immediately felt that pit in your stomach, or maybe you've now written five drafts of an email because you're trying not to sound mean, even though you're exhausted and you swear you've said this thing so many times to the same person, or you're kind of sick and tired of staying late, taking it on, smoothing things over, and wonder why you're the one that's always burning out. A lot of the conversations that I have on this podcast, we often hear about people hitting these walls of burnout and oftentimes not even knowing what to say. So that's why I built Boundary Boss GPT. It's kind of like having me in your pocket when you're about to respond to a text, email, or team issue, and you just don't know what to say because your people-pleasing brain is completely hijacking you. This is going to help you have clarity, confidence, and self-respect without the guilt, over-explaining, or the drama. Go ahead and grab it in the show notes below. It's totally free, and you're going to love it. Okay, now back to this awesome conversation. What are your thoughts on this idea that there's an actual war between hygienists and doctors? And when was, in your opinion, like, when was that shift?
I think there was a huge shift, like, during and after COVID, when there was a study that came out that said that hygienists had the, you know, we were at most risk of getting COVID because of aerosols and all that stuff. But honestly, we in the dental field have been just so much further ahead than hospitals and medical facilities because of all of the PPE and everything that we wear all the time, if you're proper in your PPE, right? And we found that it's not the case, but it scared a lot of people. And a lot of people retired and stuff during that time too. Yeah. But that's where it started. I think what also happened is people, you know, also understood that they needed more flexibility or they wanted more flexibility. So they left full-time gigs, I'll say, that they were at for years, and then went to temp or guest hygiene services. So they had more flexibility because their provider, the practice that they were at, wouldn't allow them to do that, which drived up wages like crazy because all the temps were asking for significantly more than what practices were willing to offer. And there was so much that went on during then. And there still are some challenges, don't get me wrong. I think it has gotten better since it first initially happened, because I had team members that refused to come back. I had team members that wanted to be phased back in. At that time during COVID, I had 13 practices and I had over 200 team members, and it was very challenging. But you needed to be flexible. You needed to be able to do that for your team. So, you know, for doctors, for practice leaders out there, be flexible. Ask your team, what do you need? Not just hygienists, right? But what do you need? Is there something that we can do to support you? Is there something that we can do if you really like them, if they're a good team member? What can we do to help you stay here or make you stay here? Have those conversations proactively and not reactively. You should be meeting with your team and asking them these questions. What can I do to support you today? Yeah. It's rare that leaders, they're not asking those things. It's surprising.
Yeah, it is and it isn't. I mean, I know, most dentists really struggle in the communication department.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And most are afraid to ask those questions because they're afraid, that they're not going to be able to handle the truth or serve the team in the way that they want. But more often than not, it's usually just very minor stuff. And, we've been doing this Culture Under Pressure webinar series, and a lot of it has been about communication and leading teams in really difficult times, like some of the ones we're in, and really speaking up and just acknowledging, hey, I'm here. Hey, I know these are hard times. I'm available if you want to speak, or if you see a team member struggling, just say, hey, I noticed you're not yourself lately. Are you okay? I'm here for you. But most people bury their head in the sand. And I find that they often do it because of a lack of training or knowing what to actually say. And even for myself, I mean, I'm usually at no shortage for words, but I have had to get trained and coached on how to have difficult conversations when I'm triggered around it. So if it's maybe conversation with a family member or even my husband, right? Not like we've had crazy conversations, but sometimes it's just I can't get out of my own way. I can't even see through this, forest. And then you just get walked through it and you're oh yeah, okay, that's not so hard. And then you just say the thing, very basic fundamental stuff, but more often than not, we're in our own way and we don't even realize it. But that's why I think people like you and myself, for that matter, are really helpful for people, because you're coming in with such an amazing lens, you're seeing all of it, and you can guide people on how to handle the situation or what to say. And I get it all the time, and I'm sure you do as well. Most people in the coaching and consulting space, number one question I think we get asked the most is, hey, how do I say X, how do I say this thing, and usually it's well, what do you want to say? Well, say that. That's a good place to start. But most people lack confidence in, and they're always second guessing themselves, or they have that intuition. Hey, my team member seems off. What should I do about that? Check in with them,
Yeah. And it's funny because you should never be leading from a place of fear.
Right.
And I think a lot of the times it's we're fearful just because of the unknown, but it's because we have that what if gears that are just going in our head. So we're thinking okay, what if this person quits, or what if they do this, and what if they do that? Instead of just saying hey, I noticed that something's off. Is there anything that I can do to support you?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And then whatever they say, just it's okay. It's how they feel. And once I realized, like, in life in general, you just have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. One of my dear friends told me this past year, she was like, if I could describe you in one word, or like your leadership style would be grace. And I'm like, you have to have grace. You have to give it. You need to be able to just be there for people. And just like, look, we're all human. We are not robots. We're not AI. Clearly, we have to use AI to be, you know, just it's okay. Just have the conversations. Again, just pull up a chair, sit down at a table, like have a cup of coffee and talk to your doctor or your hygienist or, you know, anything. And just figure out how you guys can create things together and how you can collaborate, be there for each other, deliver the best care for your patients, and everyone is happy.
Yeah.
And it is possible if you're willing to take that step and open the door and just have the conversation.
Yeah, 1,000%. And something to think about too, I think people get hung up in being afraid to ask because they might not know how to handle the response. So say someone, you know, you say, hey, I noticed you've been off. Is there anything I can do to help? And they say, yeah, I'm really struggling with childcare and I don't want to work Thursdays anymore. Let's just say that, right? It's a, and then they're deer in headlights and they're like, I don't know how to handle this. And so one suggestion I often give is telling people you don't need to have the solution ready. Like when, if somebody does come to you with something, you can say, hey, Sue, thank you so much for sharing this with me. I really appreciate it. Can we circle back on this conversation? Or can you give me a couple days to think about, you know, how we can find a solution for this? And is there anything else that you want to share with me so I can take it into consideration? And have them just share what they need to share. And you can say, great, thank you. You know, can you give me a little bit of time before I respond? I want to make sure that I have a thoughtful response to this. Mm-hmm. And then that's okay. And then take that information, bring it back to your coach, advisor, consultant, whomever, and be like, oh my God, what do I do with this? You know, like, how do I handle this? And then workshop it. Or like, if you feel like you're blindsided by it, you don't have to have the response in that moment. And I think we've been trained so much as like being impulsive and we need to know. And I think it's a performance issue for a lot of leaders because they want to just look like they're an amazing leader all the time. And they just have it always figured out and they always have it all together. And you and I both know in working with leaders, no leader has it figured out, nor do they have it all together. Mm-hmm. So, no. Hey, everybody, don't worry. We all know your secret. No. Let's
go. And you know what's so funny? Like, I had team members years ago that were like, for me personally, they're like, Jen always knows everything. She always knows how to do everything. And like, why is she so perfect? And I'm like, guys, let's be honest. No one is perfect. But the responses that you have, like, I don't have all the answers. I've never had all the answers, but I might know someone that does, right? Yeah. So if someone comes at you and says, you know what, I can't because of childcare, like, I can't work on Thursdays anymore, and you don't have that answer, it's like, okay, I understand you're having a challenge. Why don't we schedule a time to meet, and let's go over it, and why don't you kind of think about some solutions? I'll see what I can figure out, and we'll brainstorm together. Mm-hmm. Done. Now, to that person, it might look like I got my shit together and I know what to do, but guess what? I don't, because I'm going to go call Brandy and be like, what am I going to do right now? Right? But it looks like you have it together. So just like as a leader too, just practicing some of those things, because when someone comes at you with that, like you can look like a deer in headlights, but you don't have to. Like you can look calm and poised, even though like inside you're like, that duck under the water, right? Like,
yeah, I love that.
Calm, and you're like going against the current like crazy.
Yeah.
But like go to the, if you have a practice manager or, you know, or administrator, whatever the title is, that should be someone that you go to talk to about that stuff too. Especially as a doctor, I don't know about you, Brandy. I am the biggest proponent of you need a practice manager. Doctors need to focus on clinical. They can be there because they're the owner. They're obviously going to support that's their decision at the end of the day. But have a practice manager that can support you in the business side, can deal with all of the I can't work on Thursday anymore conversations, and then can come to you with those. So that way you don't have to be stressed out about the patient in your chair, that they're in pain, and now you have Sue that can't work on Thursdays anymore. Like, have an office manager that can support you with that so you can focus on what only you can possibly, like, physically, only what you can do. it makes life so much easier. Your business is so much better if you have the right person that's there to support you in that too.
Yes, 1,000%. 1,000%. Yes, yes, yes. So, okay, what is your recommendation, I suppose, if you have a hygiene team that's operating, you know, underperforming in your eyes? So I get probably like, where would you, I guess, what are the first three things you would start with? My guess is, well, you tell me. Yeah. Tell me your three things that you'd start with.
So the first thing I would do to determine if they are truly underperforming is look at what their compensation is based on your net production or your collection. So for a healthy hygiene department, it's a 3-to-1 ratio. So if you are paying them $50 an hour, they need to produce on a net basis $150 an hour minimum to be a healthy department. So definitely look at that first, because sometimes we think that they're underperforming, but they're not, based on different things, or vice versa. I have found that before too. So I would start there and then just start to have a conversation. It might be that you need to hire a coach or a consultant to come in and help you to set your standard of care, to go over education so everyone on your team is calibrated. They have the same, you know, verbiage that they're saying to patients, so that way they can help the patients to get to yes for different treatments for perio and everything there though too. Just having that is super, super beneficial. And then when you have that, then have the conversation about compensation. Like, you can say, look guys, once we're able to do this, then yes, we're going to talk about compensation, but I want to make sure that we are all on the same page, that you guys have the education, the training, the knowledge to be able to support this standard of care. And then we'll talk about compensation and stuff more. Now, if your hygienists are completely underpaid, then you need to do something about that. And there's so many different resources that you can look at, like U.S. Department of Labor, Dental Post does an annual survey. So don't just look at one source, look at all multiple sources just to kind of get an idea as to where you stack up. But just get all your information together, and I would kind of start there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What are your thoughts on, you know, a lot of offices, again, are in this, you know, they're trying to find hygienists, and hygienists are getting hired, and they're asking, you know, for well over $60 an hour, and you have a current team that's maybe making $50, $55 an hour. Mm-hmm. What do you suggest if they're really desperate for hygienists? Do they give the new hire whatever they're asking for? And then how, you know, people talk, so they're going to find out, you know, what people are making. How do you avoid a coup? And what's your suggestion on managing that?
So it really depends on the team and the culture that you have. So I personally am not a fan of bringing someone in at a higher rate unless you're willing to bring up others. I think it's also based on level of experience and education and everything too. And I think my husband works, he used to be a teacher, so he works in the school system. And one of the things that they have is like the ladders and the steps, right? So for this amount of education, you're here. For this many years of service, you're here. It makes it so clear as to what your compensation is. And honestly, if dental practices had that and they just said, okay, look, based on your years of service, based on your educational level, based on like the CE that you've done, now you're here, and then they can move up, they can move over, right? If you have associates, bachelors, anything like that, it makes it so standardized and so easy to have that conversation. That's like the dream dental practice, is having something that's that clear, because then you can just tell them it is truly based on your experience, and we're going to sit down and we'll go over it together. But then, because everyone's on the same playing field then, and then they know what everyone is making because they have that. But I think the other thing too is just communicating that with your team and saying like, look, if you do have to hire someone like at 60 and everyone else is like at 55, say, you know what? Okay, I might hire you on that today, but our plan is to go base plus commission. And when that happens, everyone will be at the same base. But tell your team that. Don't let them find out on their own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's when hits the fan and you don't want to worry about that.
Yeah, for sure. So you've been in dentistry now for how long?
Oh, gosh. Since I was in the 7th grade.
Yeah. Yeah, forever.
A long time. Yeah.
I remember that about you. So you've been around for a very long time. And What kind of essence do you feel is being lost in dentistry that you kind of miss compared to the earlier days?
I think in the earlier days too, right? Like I was in a different place than I am now, but I think there was a lot more in practices. There was a lot more camaraderie. There was a lot more of like, we're in this together. We're doing this together. Like we're here to serve patients, but we're here to have fun. And unfortunately, I feel like some practices in the more recent years, because of the stress, because of the challenges, because of the increased wages, like we could go on and on and on, like the demand to serve patients, the reducing their hygiene appointments, like some of that has gone away and they're not taking the time to meet. And they might not even be having team meetings or even huddles anymore, I've heard, in more recent years. So they're not communicating. And then they wonder why there's problems. Yeah. So I think just like having that time set aside to have with your team, I'm finding a lot of practices haven't kept that up, I'll say, whether they might not find the value in it, but then they realize how valuable it was when challenges happen. So that's kind of one of the things that I'm seeing in practices a lot more.
Yeah, and kind of that long-term loyalty and like people really finding their quote-unquote dental home. Mm-hmm. Feel like that is a little bit lost, or when people have been at it for a certain amount of time, they usually want to grow and do more, which I think is also a beautiful thing too, you know, people wanting to expand themselves and do more in the industry, where I think not that long ago people would be lifelong dental assistants or hygienists or front office or something like that.
I was assistant hygienist, and then I was in the same practice for 15 years, and I was a hygienist, then practice manager, then regional, and then, you know, way down the road, VP of ops, like of 17 practices. I never would have dreamed this for myself, but I had the opportunity and worked with a great leader, doctor, to be able to do that. And he gave me the opportunity. So then I was able to give others the opportunity, which is completely full circle. And I want people to be able to have that. But it's because we had that strong foundation of communication that we were able to.
Yeah. So to wrap it up, what would be like a piece of advice that you would give a doctor or office manager, or practice administrator to prevent having team members being in that mind space, like the caller that called in that was really, it sounded like really burnt out, you know, exhausted, resentful, tired of being put in a box for her entire career and being told to be quiet and just, you know, follow along and not think for yourself. What would be a suggestion to help leaders avoid having team members get to that place?
I think the number one thing I would say is schedule time to meet with every single person on your team individually, at least every other week. And it doesn't need to be a full-blown meeting, like 15 minutes. And just ask them, like, you know, how is everything going? Is there anything I can do to support you? What can I do to keep you here? And just don't ask the same questions all the time, because that would just be awkward, right? But always ask them what you can do to support them. And for that hygienist too, I felt bad when I saw that. And it sounds like to me, she just hasn't found the right place yet. And I think that when she does find the right place, she's going to know it and she's going to be appreciated. And I'm sorry that she's had to go through this like many have, but you'll find a place that has a great clinical leader and has a great team leader with, you know, an office practice manager, and you can do it. Just stick it out. And you know, I wish everyone the best, but there's plenty of people that are out there to support you as leaders of the practice. So just make sure you're there to support your team too.
I agree. Yeah. And I like what you're saying. Ask and then also listen. Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah, see if it's workable. See if there's something you can work out. But this went so fast. Thank you so much. You're amazing. And I can't wait to share this with everybody once it's out. But I really appreciate all the thought and care you put into offices and supporting the industry, both hygiene and doctor and just general operations as well. So thank you for all of your insight and being a lifer here in the dental industry and continuing to fight the good fight. So I appreciate you so much. And thank you for all your time today.
Thank you so much.
You just listened to The Real Talk of Dental. If it hit, if it stung, if it made you feel just a little more human, good. That's the point. This isn't about fixing practices. It's about healing people. And if you're brave enough to show up real in this industry, you're my kind of leader. Subscribe, call in, send your wildest workplace confession. And most importantly, don't clean up for anyone. The mess, that's where the magic lives. We'll see you again on the next episode.